And Jeff, let's go ahead and take a quick break. Let's say about 2 or 3 minutes, okay? So that way we can get up and stretch out a little bit, and then we'll be right back. All right, folks.
Blood from little plastic cups that they make themselves from detergent bottles.
Could men become illegal?
A man from Armagh has been given a life sentence.
A man's been found guilty at the Old Bailey.
A man charged with a brutal murder.
A man's been charged with murdering.
The same man could be responsible for two double murders.
5 to 6 men would rape us for hours.
All the suspects are male.
Could men become illegal?
A man convicted of killing a former.
The man accused of raping and murdering.
This tragedy is man-made.
Could men become illegal?
Police across the country are hunting this man.
Gunmen were branded as terrorists.
One gunman and two accomplices.
A Canadian submarine with 57 on board drifts in heavy seas.
57 men?
Royal Navy and RAF assets.
Assets? Wait a minute.
Just tell us about the number of people on board.
There's 57 crew.
Crew?
There was 9 personnel who reported smoke inhalation.
Personnel?
2 of concern, but none of them require a medevac from the submarine.
To reach 13 coal miners who were trapped after an explosion in West Virginia.
They mean men.
We believe the individuals might be located.
You mean men.
People die on roadworks simply because they're trying to mend our roads and make them better for us.
Hello, men are people too.
People were desperate to feed themselves and their families.
The workforce were ruthlessly exploited. 112 of them died.
Yes, men were exploited. Still are.
The lives of future passengers depend on the steady hands of these craftspeople and engineers.
And these craftspeople are men.
Two firefighters have died after a blaze in East London. The pair were on the top floor of the building.
I know he meant to say men.
4 RAF crew are feared dead. None of the crew members have been found. 5 soldiers were killed.
4 bodies have been found near. Contact with the crew was lost. 5 members of the regiment were killed.
3 US soldiers died there today, but 9 others have been killed.
The soldier was airlifted to Baghdad for treatment.
All are men.
When Iraqi fighting men are killed, they're insurgents.
They say they've killed hundreds of the insurgents in fighting like this.
When they kidnap a woman, they're men.
Mrs. Hassan was kidnapped by armed men who stopped her car.
The deaths of men are deliberately suppressed behind their job titles and gender-neutral labels. Men are reduced from human beings to human doings.
Women, however, certainly do exist, especially when something bad happens. Indeed, tragedies are somehow more tragic when women are affected.
3 students and a female officer among the dead. Many of those who died were passers-by, including 7 women.
Hundreds of thousands, mostly women and children, are living in camps with little food and clean water.
Hospital officials said women and children are among the dead.
BBC has evidence of police attacking women and children.
An entire trench was filled with women and children.
Mostly women and children.
At the roadside, we saw women and children. They're being forced to flee.
While the women are forced to flee, the men are forced to die. But we hear nothing about that.
It's just as accurate to lump men and children together.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, this is DJ Timmy. We're back. Folks, yes. Just keep in mind, we got a lot of noise in the background. The gentleman that we're having the interview with, Jeff, he's in another country. He's in Peru. Kind of like out in the middle of nowhere, if you know what I mean. And he's stuck in a cafe. It's about the only thing he can get with internet access for his computer. So kind of bear with us, and that would explain a little bit of the reason why there's a lot of feedback. But anyways, hey, Jeff, are you still there?
I'm here.
Absolutely wonderful. Okay. Yes, so, thanks for... Go ahead.
Okay, so just want to read one thing for... I think it was a slip of your tongue before your comment about natives. So I just asked you to take that back about I think a slip of your tongue there. So I just, if anybody's else listening, you know, I have to stand up for that. So I think you said about savages. So I just apologize for that, because I think that, I know it's a slip of a tongue by you.
No, I was referring to some of the actions of how they were treating you, how they were treating your children, yanking them around, falsely accusing. You know, maybe I could have picked a better word for that, but that's what I was referring to.
Okay, and I understand there. Okay, that's great. One little point I make: I'm really lucky right now with one support. I have a girlfriend. Her name's Veronica. She's a great woman here. She's a school teacher in sixth grade here in Peru, she's a great role model for my children, and she's kind of like a stepfather mother for them. And she's a really great woman. I really love her a lot there, and I know she's listening. So to say hello to Veronica there, and I say it a little bit sad. Te amo, Veronica. Mucho amor. Amor is love. So I got that out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
welcome everybody.
Okay, go ahead there, Tim. Any questions at all? Where would you like to go from there?
Oh, sorry. I thought that she was going to say hello. I was just trying to say hi back. That's all.
I was going to bring her in here. She's listening, but not here. I just wanted to say and bring that in there.
Sure thing. No problem. Yeah, please continue.
Okay, so... So it was a real hard time. So it was two years fighting. It was a really tangled case colored by race, culture, bias, and conflicting opinions. And it was really sad, really stressful. That all this had gone. You know, it's a really nasty fight. You know, ended up fighting over where the body was buried. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, I couldn't have people physically fighting over the casket. So everything that happened was just unbelievable. You know, as soon as my wife died, you know, I didn't exist. I was the white man, the enemy. You know, it was devastating. You know, I lived in the reserve for about 9 years. I had friends. I was a management consultant for them. I got the millions of dollars in funding. I had helped people, and then knew a lot of people. And suddenly, I was a white man. You know, it was really bad. And the problem with the reserve is, in the culture is, they go so protective to a fault. You know, and so during all this time, the children were with. My late wife's mother, the grandmother, and you know, in Native culture, it speaks of village philosophy holds sway, and the bonds of the community and family are equally sacrosanct. And I'm just quoting from the Globe and Mail, and it says, "So when a threat looms to remove the children from the reserve, the Native Indian band does not take it lightly. Trouble is, this time the threat comes from the children's own father. And now my roots as a father has been really trampled by abuse of power." And the Wichita's executive director is a gentleman named George Samard. And anybody that's dealt with their children's aid in the United States or in Canada or Australia or around the world, one thing you can say there. Nobody from Children's Aid is going to comment in the paper. Well, they did. They went full bore, which my lawyer loves. You know, this late comment, you know, they're burying their own grave. And so this longtime executive director, he came out in public and talked about the case. And he said that the best interests of the Native children, even half-Native, are inextricably bound to the Aboriginal culture and can never be trumped by the rights of a parent. He said he would like to see the father, me, and the grandmother share custody and legal status under a co-parenting arrangement with the children spending summers on reserve. So he said, I'm not as necessarily offside with questions. I've talked to Jeff any number of times, and yet the community and him are polarized. And my advice to him is, why do the kids need to become a pawn in his struggle? Why can't you mutually raise them for their own mental health as opposed to one side winning over the other? And repeat that again. He's saying in public, why can't you mutually raise them for their own mental health as opposed to one side winning over the other? I mean, that's just crazy.
That's all, yeah. And that's what it's turned out to be. I mean, that's the whole system is pitting one against the other. And that's absurd. And what and hurts the most is the children.
Yeah, and the children. And what crazy is the children's aid saying this. I mean, usually they're supposed to be what's best for the children. They're coming out and saying this. And I was represented by a great lawyer, Michael Capello. He'd represented people 15 years in child welfare. He was an expert in child welfare. That's all he did. And he said, this is a quote from him, this case is in like any case I've ever had. Said Michael Capello, a Thunder Bay family lawyer who had represented parents in child welfare cases for over 15 years. It should have been a child custody proceeding. It should never have been a child protection proceeding. And, you know, they're abusing their power.
Yes. So, but you were saying the underlying factor is because it was a cultural difference. And it was basically an ethics and cultural war.
Exactly, yeah.
Or and also political.
And like, you know, some people are probably mad and going public again and there's hurt feelings. Well, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Well, not. I mean, what's done to my children, my late wife's memory desecrated, her funeral room and all this, and they think I'm going to lie down and not be frustrated, not be mad. And forget, you know, how can you forgive someone? They do something against me, forgive, but hurt and cause pain and damage to my children, that is really, really upsetting.
Okay. Well, I think some of that is the drawback of what's going on in our current culture here in America, because America, the officials have turned, or the head officials have turned far left. Far left liberalism, to where they're causing a ruckus in other countries, and I'm wondering if this is kind of like a fallback to that. There's no way to prove that, and it's hearsay. But I'm just throwing it out there. You know, this could be one of the reasons why these people don't like us, and maybe that's why they call us white, you know, instead of just regular human beings, like what we refer to everybody else. But
I understand a lot of First Nations, you know, the time I understand that there was a lot of things done wrong. There was a lot done wrong. You know, I was one of the advocates there. I know all that, you know, a lot of agree with, you know, there was a lot of, they were put on reserve in the United States and Canada, put on reserve. They didn't choose. They were put on reserve. And my late father-in-law, he had passed away previously. If he had been alive, this would never have happened. He was a former police officer, really great guy named Doug Kelly. And he told me a number of times, he said, you know, I have 1 foot in the native world and 1 foot in the white world. And what I mean by white world is the non-native world. So it's like a different world, because they live in their culture, some of things tried in the past, their beliefs, you know, which I highly respect. But they were put on the reserve, and they put in and it wasn't their choice. And so I understand them, and I support them that way. But it's bad that they took this. I mean, for like somebody said, you know, for hundreds of years, people, you know, took our children. Well, now they've returned the favor, and they took mine. Now here's a real bombshell here for you, Tim. A year and a half after the children were taken, I was told by a senior band official that the political leadership, that being a chief and council of the First Nation, of a Anangaming First Nation, Nestor Falls, Ontario, the chief and council at the time, had ordered the First Nation child care workers not to let my children leave the Indian Reserve. The senior, you know, official was present, you know, witnessed decision by the chief and council, and one of the council members was also ahead of the band's children, aid also at the time. So this was a political decision that was tantamount to ordering kidnapping of his, of my children.
Right, right.
So this was a political decision to kidnap my children. Could you imagine if you know, if your city decided, okay, we're gonna have, you know, we're not gonna let your children leave town or state or country. So that nobody would step for that.
Okay. Let me throw this in there. We just got a question from one of our viewers right now. Somebody had messaged me, and they're wondering. They heard about, you know, them falsely accusing you of murdering your wife. We know that that's hogwash. But did they find you guilty? Did you? I mean, were you set free from that, or are they holding that over your head?
Oh, no problem there at all. Let's make that fair. Is the police were great. I love the police. No, I love the police there. They had the, maybe I didn't make that clear. They had investigated me for about 10 or 12 hours. After 10 or 12 hours, they closed the case. They said, this is nothing going on here. Case closed, happened. They saw, you know, they saw they were trying to intimidate me, you know, so they thought it was baloney too. And they were upset. They're going, they're using, using police resources to try to intimidate you, and they weren't happy about that.
Yeah, I'm glad they wised up to that, and they caught on very quickly. Very good.
Yeah, so that's no problem. I have no problem there at all, and that was cleared. So that's not an issue.
You were cleared. You were not charged, and no, everything's good to go there. Okay.
Yeah, so I have no problem there at all. I praise them. I didn't have those guys were great. They were really great. And like
good.
They said, they tried to throw every accusation under the book from me. Depressed, and children were endangered by me. Everything under disgusting accusations.
Okay.
And during all the time, you know, I told you before, my late wife Yvonne, you know, she had been very, very sick. You know, all her huge medical problems.
Mm-hmm.
So we had two family doctors who saw on a weekly basis. So either my wife, or when you have two little kids, as people know, you go to the doctor quite a bit, especially when they're, you know, under 7 and 4, and they get colds and ear infections and ear lymphoma. So, and occasionally I ever get sick. And my wife, it all hurt because she was seen to see the doctors on a weekly basis, and sometimes even bi-weekly. So we have two doctors, Dr. Peter Harlan and Dr. S. Peterson of Kenora, who saw us weekly, that we sometimes drive to Kenora, about an hour and a half away, or when they came twice a week to the reserve for a half a day each time, and we'd see them that time. So they saw us lots of time. Every time my wife went to the doctor, I was with her. My kids go to the doctor, I was there. So they really knew me, and we had a rapport, and so they knew, you know, us inside and out. And they came out in support of me. And they wrote support letters where they praised my ability as a father and a parent. And said they didn't see any signs I was depressed. They didn't see any signs the children were neglected in any way, or the children were in danger. These letters were ignored by Native Children's Aid and the First Nation. Completely ignored. And the doctors were never contacted or asked for their professional opinion by the Native Children's Aid. There are two outstanding doctors that saw us on a weekly basis for over 5 years, up to a few days before my wife's death, and before we left the First Nation, and we dropped by, and they were ignored.
Okay. Well, we're going to certainly take that into consideration, but right here, we're going in a minute and 20. We have not yet opened up the phone lines. Would you mind if we open up that phone lines for other people to call in?
I'd love it. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, if any of our viewers, our listeners out there, would like to call in and ask Jeff any questions, keep in mind, it might be a little difficult, challenging at times, just bear with us, but the number here is 707 701-3325. And it's Monday the 26th, 2014, at about 8:21 p.m. Pacific Time. Once again, that number is 707-701-3325, and you're free to call. So, we'll just continue here, and if we get a phone call coming in, I'll let you know real quick, and I'll patch them through. Okay. Otherwise, please